Today, answers matter more than ever before. That's why IBM is helping businesses manage customer questions with Watson Assistant. It's conversational AI designed to work for any industry. Let's put smart to work. Visit ibm.com/Watson Assistant.
Good Monday morning, everybody. Hope you had a fantastic weekend. We've got a great show scheduled for you today. LZ, my friend, how are you on this beautiful Monday morning?
Man, I am fantastic. Spent some more time with the protesters over the weekend. Not a great deal, but some, just to continue to just sort of be witness to what was going on and what they were talking about. Obviously, once you get past Mr. Floyd's memorial and charges have been filed, you know, you begin to wonder if the protests are going to dissipate. That has not been my experience yet. I know there were protests that were scheduled out in Inglewood. There were protests scheduled at SC. So as far as I can tell, in L.A., they're still out here. But I will say this, Travis.
Yes.
Very funny. So I'm sore from all the walking, right? So I decided to give myself last night a little gummy to help ease the pain. It's a medical situation. As I'm sitting on the couch and being treated for my symptoms, the winds really started kicking up down here and like severely picking up. And I'm looking out the window, and remember, I'm high, and I can see the wind pick up the cover for my barbecue grill.
Uh-oh.
And it's toying with it, and it's spinning around, but I'm high, so I can't quite get up fast enough. I think I actually up, but I'm actually still sitting on the ground. And I can't quite get to it, and I watch my barbecue grill cover fly up in the air like a kite and then get thrown over the balcony. I have no idea where it is. It might be in Santa Monica by now.
I was going to say, so it went down to Fig, and then it was just gone from there. So who knows where it is?
It was just gone.
I'm just glad that you made it through the weekend with all of the steps. We were having a little conversation this morning before we got going about how the pace maybe was a little extra for you at this point in your life.
Bro, Gen Z ain't playing, man. For all you baby boomers and Gen X marchers, let me tell you, you need your Skechers. Because the Gen X ain't playing, man. They get their steps in.
Absolutely. Yeah, no, there were protests down in my neck of the woods down here over the weekend. And like you said, that it doesn't feel, even though we've had some memorial services, even though we've had charges filed, and look, at some point, the participation in these things is going to start to wane, and then we're going to see what's left and what happens next. But up until this point, we're talking the better part of a couple of weeks, the passion for the protest, the feelings that people have for these moments do not seem to have dissipated at all, which I think is a wonderful sign. This is not something that's just, okay, this is the moment where we're going to be passionate about this and then immediately go back to the way things were. This has been a couple of weeks of protests and speeches, and yet here we are again on the third Monday morning of all of this, and it is still dominating the conversation in the sports world, too, that this is not really going anywhere, and I think that's great news. You've heard me say this over the last couple of weeks, LZ. My great concern is that once the outrage from this moment starts to fade into the past, that we're going to go back to the way that things were, or at least mostly go back to the way that things were. And I'm not quite sure that's true, because we've seen people continue to be upset. We've seen people continue to protest. We've seen people try to kind of pull it back to the middle, and we're not letting it happen. It's incredibly encouraging to see people continue to say, no, we're not going to do it that way. I'm sure we'll get into some of them specifically, but this weekend, there were a number of incidents of people saying things, issuing statements. I'm sure, you know, the CrossFit thing that happened over the weekend, people like Reebok's like, nope, we're out of here. We're not doing that. That people seem, from people, corporations, entities are far more aware of not being able to play the middle on this, that you need to pick a side. And so far, people are picking the side of, no, we're not going to do business with you anymore.
Yeah, it's what I've been writing about, is what I've personally been jumping up and down on air about, is that, you know, this idea that you can find safety by playing both sides, as you said, is a good place to be. Whether you're a league, an owner, you know, a player, this notion that someone asks you about the protest and you start talking about the flag, people aren't having it anymore. Mm-hmm. And you saw with Drew Brees, I've lost track how many apologies he's issued.
But multiple. I will say, multiple apologies.
Multiple and his wife. Apologies.
You know, but the good thing is that, you know, as far as I'm concerned, he took a significant step from moving from simply saying I'm sorry to representing more along the lines of some a layer of anti-racism. And that is not allowing the president to try to hijack him as a prop. You know, the President Trump tried to say that, you know, Drew Brees was wrong to apologize, that he was right the first time. And Drew Brees went right back at him and just said no. And these are the reasons why this was never about the protest. This is about criminal justice reform. We need to do something and blah, 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 blah. He was respectful. He didn't call him anything by name, which is fine. But the simple fact that he was willing to publicly challenge the president as he tried to spin this narrative about the flag, I thought that was an encouraging sign. And as I think about some of the things he said in his third or fourth apology, you know, I'm beginning to think that maybe he did have a change of heart, because that was a pretty big step for him, especially representing Louisiana.
I want to talk about what the president tweeted at Drew Brees and what he has now tweeted at Roger Goodell as well, talking about, because Roger Goodell said that they blew it the first time, that they want to listen. And I want to get to that as well, specifically into what was said on both sides of that one. However, but before we move to that, with Drew Brees in particular, like you said, it was the original statement followed by the double down afterwards. And then from that moment forward, he's been working very hard to issue multiple apologies, and they seem sincere. They have the words that were lacking the first time. He said in a number of times, I was wrong about the flag. I now realize that that's not what this was about. This is about human beings. This is not about the flag. This is about people voicing their intolerance for issues and for hatred and police brutality and racism. And this is what they're trying to be attention to. And I was wrong. And now I understand what it is. From a distance, you look at it and you heard it enough times, you're like, you know what? It's either his eyes have been opened a little bit, or he has somebody really good in his team that is helping him with this stuff. But you saw the responses from a number of his teammates, Malcolm Jenkins, Michael Thomas, and others. They seem to be willing to give him another opportunity to come back to their side of the issue.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, it's a good thing to see for a couple of reasons. First and foremost, it's good to see, because that's exactly what we need to have happen to really have significant movement in terms of addressing systemic racism. As I've said before, you can't police people's thoughts. You can't police people's sense of morality. But what you can do is direct it so that it doesn't have a negative impact on other people's lives. You can legislate it so that people don't die because of your racism. And what you need to have happen in order to change the morality part that you can't legislate is to have everyday people who are role models, people who have significant influence among others, using that platform to talk about the real issues, why we still are here. And I was talking recently, and they were talking about, yeah, man, this is exactly what Kendrick Lamar was thinking about. I was like, brother, let me tell you something. Every 20 years, a Kendrick Lamar is saying something about this. You know, this isn't a new conversation that's been had in culture either. It's like, it's been in culture. It's been used in television shows. It's been talked about in plays, Broadway, off-Broadway plays. We've had it in movies, obviously written in books. We've had people on television. This has been a conversation going on for a very, 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 very long time. The difference is that now you have someone like a Drew Brees that, when he's confronted with the truth of the matter, is digging his heels in on the wrong side of history, but has decided to uproot himself from his comfort and be uncomfortable and use his platform. And hopefully he influences other people who look up to him to do the same thing.
Yeah, hopefully, because it'll be interesting. You know, football season's right around the corner. We're going to have exhibition games here in a couple of months, right? The exhibition season starts in August, and we're going to have games there. And obviously the players, we've seen Adrian Peterson and other guys, and we know that there's going to be protests. There's going to be people taking a knee and doing what Colin Kaepernick and a handful of others did several years ago. Roger Goodell has said that, you know, we were wrong for not listening to our players. We are listening. I'm listening. I'll be reaching out to players who've raised their voices. That he seems to be far more open to the idea of using that as a platform to say there's a problem and I want it fixed. And the president of the United States tweeted directly at Roger Goodell, or at least used him by name, saying, are you going to let this happen again? Or, you know, I'll read it exactly. Could it be even remotely possible that in Roger Goodell's rather interesting statement of peace and reconciliation, he was intimating that it would be okay for the players to kneel or not to stand for the national anthem, thereby disrespecting our country and our flag? We saw what happened with this issue several years ago with statements like this, that the NFL basically said, no, we're not going to do that because they were worried about the backlash from a certain sector of their fans. They were backlash from a certain sector of, I'm sure, their sponsors. This one feels like it could be different. We'll see what Roger Goodell says, but his statements over the weekend were in direct conflict with what the president is tweeting this morning.
Yeah, you know, it's after I got over the image of seeing Roger Goodell sit there like Mr. Rogers.
Yeah.
I started really listening to what he was saying. And I was definitely listening for one particular name that was not mentioned. So I would characterize his statement as this, you know, almost all the way there. Now, mm-hmm. I don't know if he can't say Colin Kaepernick's name because of some legal schmiegel. You know, I don't know what the agreement was. I don't know what the Non-Disclosure Act requires. Maybe he's required never to say his name in public. I don't know. But I would certainly say for looking in, seeing him sit there, talk about we were wrong, talk about criminal justice reform, talk about fighting systemic racism, and not acknowledging the person that tried to get you there before all of this, it looked hollow to me. It just did. Now, again, if he has legal schmiegel, you know, restrictions, it is what it is. But on the outside looking in, Roger Goodell saying I'm sorry without publicly apologizing to Colin Kaepernick just still felt short of the goal to me.
All right, we'll continue that conversation. Plus, some college football players as well are saying, no, we're not going to say nothing anymore. We have some things to say. That's coming up next on The Morning Show on 710 ESPN. I'm not going to lie, LZ, hearing the call of a basketball game right there and knowing that it's on the not-too-distant horizon feels really good.
Yeah.
It feels really good that we're going to get to see LeBron and Anthony Davis try to put the finishing touches on this day because it feels like a lifetime ago. But, man, were they absolutely rolling when we went into the suspensions.
Oh, God, yeah. God, I mean, think about all that momentum that's being built. You know, not just in terms of where the Lakers were in the landscape, but also, obviously, you know, the MVP. To go head-to-head and shut down, you know, Giannis in critical stretches of the game the way that LeBron did, in addition to the scoring and the assists and the rebounds, but just the straight-up defense, and then to harass Kawhi and go after him on the offensive end, go after him, look for him at moments. It was like the Lakers were rolling as a team. The city was rolling with the Lakers, and LeBron was rolling to an MVP. And unfortunately, all of that, you know, the air got let out of the balloon, you know, because of, you know, Rudy Gobert's positive coronavirus test. Mm-hmm. Because I really felt that with that momentum, Travis, he was going to hunt him down, and he was going to get that MVP for Giannis. Now, obviously that's not going to happen, but at that moment, that weekend you're talking about, yeah, he was coming, dog. He was coming.
Yeah, well, there were 20-some-odd games left, you know. There was about a quarter of the season left, and there was enough time. It would have had to been more of that, but it wasn't like you had a week left, and there just wasn't. There was just enough time for him to do it. And like you said, under the new format, I would imagine that all of those sorts of awards have been decided already, if not officially, then at least unofficially, that Ja Morant's going to be the Rookie of the Year, that Giannis is going to be the MVP. But had the season played out over those 20 games, who knows what Zion would have been able to do? Who knows what LeBron might have been able to do? Because over 8 games in the different format we're going to have in Orlando, I don't think anybody's going to change their mind.
No, there's not enough time. You know, there just isn't. Unless, the only thing I can think of, unless Milwaukee gets off to some sort of like ridiculously poor start in those 8 games or whatever that they may decide, and the Lakers go undefeated. You know, if something fluky weird like that happened, you know, we'll
hurry,
see.
up and get here July 31st. You can't get here fast enough. We were talking about Roger Goodell's statements over the weekend. We've been talking about what we've been talking about for the better part of a couple of weeks here. It's interesting too, Wilsey, because one of the dynamics that the professional players, that especially the very, very influential ones, the LeBron Jameses of the world and whatnot, are on ground where they can speak their mind. That he can say, this is what I think, this is what I believe, and if you don't like it, tough, I don't care. The college players are a little bit different. The college players still live in an environment where the coach is the ultimate decider of their fates, ultimately. That if I don't get to play, if I don't get minutes or I don't get to go out there and play, I might not be able to have a future in professional sports. That I might lose my scholarship if I'm a rank and file player. All of these things. And even the college players seem to be finding their voices, or at least be willing to say it out loud where they never have been before. Whether it's calling out coaches on their staff for things that they're uncomfortable with, whether or not it's calling out coaches on their staff, like we saw at Florida State, about that's not what happened. They say they talked to all of us. No, they didn't. It's another example of another group of people who typically do not speak out for fear of a backlash coming their way, or saying, no, I'm going to say what's on my mind. And if you don't like it, it's going to land on you. It's not going to land on me.
Yeah, this is what I'm talking about this generation, man. This generation, you know, people like, you know, your eldest, my son, you know, 22, he started marching in Chicago with Laquan McDonald when he was in high school, mm-hmm. and helping to organize things, and then moved to New York for school and was still involved with protesting and getting involved politically. This generation, man, this generation is not waiting. And I can't help but think this is the legacy that perhaps the LeBron Jameses, the, you know, Dwayne Wade's, this is their legacy, right? Because this generation of NBA players was way more political than the generation before in terms of speaking out, mm-hmm. and speaking against oppression. This generation. And so you got to think that all the kids that grew, that, you know, that have grown up, it's been years now since Kaepernick's been, you know, on the football field. Those kids who are speaking out were in high school when this started. Some of them might have been at the later stages of junior high when this all started. And so these are the athletes that they're growing up with. LeBron James, Colin Kaepernick. This is the influence of their willingness to use their platform. And so this generation right here, man, regardless of what area they happen to be in, and as you mentioned, Travis, typically you don't hear from football players. And, you know, seriously hear from football players.
Mm-hmm.
And it's because of the influence of the athlete that was set before them, who they watched growing up. And I think it's a fantastic thing that they found their voice, because one, it challenges the system, but also two, this group of individuals need to be empowered. They need to recognize their influence and not just be afraid that the coach is not going to play them, because they make up the coach. They're the reasons why people are coming in and filling up a $100,000 seat stadium.
Mm-hmm.
They're not there to see Dabo Swinney. They're not there for Dabo. They're there for you.
Well,
and the players are starting to act that way.
The Dabo is a case in and of himself, and we'll get to that in a second. There has to be an element too, LZ, I think, of the coaches finally realizing that the players have something on them. If enough of the players say, hey, look, I don't like the way this guy's treating me. It's making me feel a certain way. The coach can't just say, get over it. He's just trying to coach you guys up. Don't worry about it. He didn't mean anything by it. Or all the typical phraseology that we hear when somebody's treating somebody poorly and they want to dismiss it because maybe he's an effective coach. We're seeing what's going on in Iowa. We're seeing what's going on in some other places where coaches are saying and doing things and the players are speaking out. And whether it's on tape or whether it's just strength in numbers, more and more people are saying, no, this is not okay. And that previously the coach was, this is a matter that's going to be handled internally. We'll deal with it amongst ourselves. They don't have the luxury of doing that anymore, because once a player or two says, that guy said this thing to me and I don't like it, there now all the heads in the room or all the heads in the country or the world look at the coach and say, okay, What are you going to do about that? It's not just one of those, hey, go back and play. Be quiet. Let me deal with my staff. I'll deal with this. We're not going to tolerate, but I'll fix it internally. It needs to be done publicly. It needs to be done quickly. And I think that the athletes realize that now, that they can affect change by saying something out loud. Whereas before, they knew if they said anything, they're going to lose their scholarship. They're going to lose their playing time. And nothing's going to happen to the coach anyway. Now, that's the opposite is probably true. That coach better be very, very careful about how he deals with his players, or if they speak up, he might find himself looking for a new job. The dynamic was totally turned itself on its head.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. When I was a student at university, we had two coaches, and I was in on these stories. Two coaches, the football coach as well as the basketball coach, were both accused of racism and using racist tactics by student athletes. And, you know, we were the student newspaper. We broke these stories, and then the local papers got involved. One of those coaches was shown the door. Mm. And that was back, you know, in the mid-90s. And our stories were built largely, I'm bringing this up because our stories were built largely on sources that did not want their faces out there, did not want their names attached to them. But we were able to corroborate enough of the story to feel comfortable printing it. Today, these students are putting their names on it, Travis. They're putting their faces on it, Travis. They're calling it out and they're saying, I'm the one that did it.
Yep.
When I was covering the college team, when I was in college, none of the guys were willing to do that for fear of retribution. This generation is fearless. Do you hear me? Because even if they were to transfer, say they wanted to transfer, now the next school knows what kind of student they're getting, and they may not want to deal with someone who's empowered like that. You feel me? Like, they put so much on the line by doing that.
100%.
I'm just in awe.
And I think part of it, too, is they know that they might get some action now, whereas before, the school was going to line up behind the coach. The general public, the alumni, was going to line up behind the coach. Like, kid's upset because he's not getting enough time. The kid's too sensitive. The kid's this, the kid's that. And now, at least if it's publicly, if that allegation is made publicly, now we listen. We listen to it and say, okay, was this said? Was this done? What are you going to do about it? It's not just, oh, I'll handle it privately. That we've given these coaches, like, this is why all of this stuff, and not to get too far afield here, because this is not the topic on the table at the point, but the reason you get situations like happened at Penn State is because nobody wanted to look outside of the room. Nobody wanted to say, hey, right. Wait, what? What they, oh, the coach will take care of it. The coach will take care of it. The coach will take care of it. Let the team take care of itself. Not anymore. That when one of these allegations is made, people from the outside look at the other guy and say, what are you going to do about it? And that's a wonderfully positive development.
Yeah, absolutely, man. Absolutely.
All right. Football is going to be played. Basketball has a date. Woo-hoo. Hockey has a date. We've seen NASCAR running races about every other day. Golf starts next weekend. The MLS has a date. Everybody's coming back to work. Except for one, and it is a terrible idea. We'll get into it next on The Morning Show on 710 ESPN.
Though we're apart these days, we're sharing more. So at GEICO, we'd like to say thanks. Thanks for sharing your savage dance moves. Thanks for sharing your DIY haircut fails. Thanks for sharing your inner lip sync star. Now it's our turn to share with the GEICO Give Back, a 15% credit on car and motorcycle policies for current and new customers. Because we're committed for the long haul, the 15% credit lasts your full policy term. Visit geico.com/giveback for more info and eligibility.
All right, before we get to everybody that's back and the one team that is not back, we have morning show breaking news, Raj.
That's right, Travis and LZ. It is official. Keyshawn and Jen, welcome Shyla to the family. They have a baby girl, baby girl, and you know, we got some of the pictures yesterday of Keyshawn in the operating room with the mask and getting ready, but it is official. It's a new addition. So we just wanted to say congratulations to Keyshawn and Jen.
That is great news. That is great news. Welcome, baby Shyla, to the world. We're going to try to do a little better than we have previously. Hopefully, you get a better run at this than we've had over the last years, decades, and whatnot. But welcome, Shyla. That is great news.
That is absolutely fantastic news. I will volunteer to be her godfather. One of my first things I need to do is to get her some meat. We need to make sure this child tastes meat. I will rescue her from the clutches of veganism. There we go.
There we go.
Don't worry. I'll be that godfather that will sniff you a double cheeseburger every now and then. Just don't tell nobody. Well,
you know, we all had the uncle that would let you have a little bit of his beer at the, you know, and that guy and maybe give you a $5 to put in your pocket and go do something, but you're going to be the uncle that's got beef jerky in his pocket and sliding it in at the get-togethers. That's good to know. It's good to know.
I'll be the uncle with the glass of chocolate milk. Go on, girl. It's all right. I got you.
It's fine. Mom and Dad don't want you to know. It's fine. It's not a big deal. Congratulations to Key.
Congratulations. And that's fantastic.
And Vance in London, a new member of the family. Always incredibly exciting. So, Key will be gone for a few days, obviously. So hopefully he comes back soon and everybody's healthy and happy. That's great news. Less great news, LZ, is the fact that all of these leagues across the world and certainly here in this country, and maybe I'm missing one here, but I'm thinking the NFL, the NBA, the NHL, MLS, NASCAR, the PGA Tour, the WNBA, all of these leagues have put together a plan to come back and play and gotten agreements from their ownership, their leagues, and their players. The one exception, of course, is Major League Baseball, and it appears that they're not any closer to coming together with an idea on how to restart their season than they were a week ago or a month ago. Here's Buster Olney saying that he does not expect to see any baseball this summer.
To personalize it, what I always like to do, I grew up on a dairy farm in Vermont, and I now own part of that farm. I split it with my brother. And so I always like to say, I bet the family farm on no baseball this year, that they won't reach an agreement because they're so entrenched on their side and there's so much anger, there's so much frustration. That's how I would bet the family farm.
Okay, that's Buster Olney, who's about as plugged into the Major League Baseball scene as you're going to find anybody. If he's saying that, that means that he believes it. That means that there is a very good chance that we're not going to see baseball. That is a catastrophically stupid idea on behalf of everybody involved in baseball. Think about this. Like I just ran down the list. Every other league in this country and across the world has figured out a way to get back to work, has figured out a way for the owners to get what they need, for the players to get what they need, and they're going back to work in the midst of something that has been unprecedented on this planet in the last 100 years or so, a pandemic that shut down everything everywhere. Everybody found a plan to get back to it except for Major League Baseball. And Major League Baseball, the one thing that they've had for years and years and years was the summer to themselves. They're, once the NBA Finals ends, which is usually ending about now on a quote-unquote regular year, right up until the end of August, there's nothing else going on other than Major League Baseball. We just proved that we can get through a summer without baseball. When we do get to the end of July, the NBA is going to be back. The Stanley Cup playoffs are going to be back. The NFL preseason is going to be starting. By the time you get into September, you've got the playoffs of all of those teams and the regular season of the NFL and the Masters and the U.S. Open and all these other events that got postponed during the summer and the spring and moved to the fall. And baseball thinks that they're going to slide back in at that point? Good luck with that, guys. I am the biggest baseball fan you're going to find, and I'm fed up with your you-know-what. I do not care who's right and who's wrong. The owners, should they open their books? Yes, they should. They're not going to. The players, do they want all their money? Yes. Are they right? Maybe. I don't know. The point is, everyone else across the world has figured out how to go back to work, and you guys are arguing over money? You're going to get swallowed up. This is an incredibly bad idea. You're already falling behind NBA. You're already behind the NFL. And now you want to go head-to-head with these guys if you wait too much longer? It is such a bad idea. And so typically, Major League Baseball, I can't believe that they're going to do this all over again.
I can. It's disappointing, but I can certainly believe it. Remember all the different times in which baseball told you who it was, what it was. It's a great disappointment. Whether it was the handling of the steroid era, whether it was the work stoppages, whether it's the decisions not to use technology to address some things that easily could have been fixed via technology, to the way that it's failed to integrate Latino players in a healthy fashion for years, having teams without translators, teams that didn't have bilingual leadership. Like, there's so many things, so many times that baseball has told you what it was over the last couple of decades. So yes, I am disappointed for, you know, selfish reasons as well as just broader reasons. You know, obviously you want to see the Dodgers out there because this might be the best shot to win the World Series since the last time they won the World Series. Mm-hmm. So you obviously you're disappointed by that, Travis. But for me to sit back and go, if the NBA couldn't figure it out, that would have shocked me. But baseball, not figuring it out with its players, trying to get over on players a couple years ago, not signing players because they were trying to squeeze them out of the contract that the market had decided was where it was set, and the owners tried to do some sort of collusion BS to try and keep good players from signing contracts and hoping they get desperate, that kind of BS. Obviously, what they did with cap, you know, it's just the cap is not even real, but they're trying to pretend like it's real so they can argue playing the guys. Like, it's all just so ridiculous, but it's baseball. It's baseball.
Yeah, your examples are accurate and abundant. No, there isn't. There's a luxury tax, a penalty for it because you can't control yourself when it comes to spending your own money. I'll be honest, and maybe it's my own naivete. And I guess it probably is. But the fact is, you would think that that they're arguing over money again is not a surprise, but that they're arguing over money now is to me, because you would think that at least Tony Clark and Rob Manfred would say, look, I hate you and you hate me. Okay. We'll never be on the same page. We don't trust each other at all. We can't do this right now. Let's find something that will allow us to go back to work right now, because we can't be the only, look, we just, if you would have told me, LZ, that you and me and Key and everybody else that does this and everybody that works at ESPN and all these other entities that cover sports, that we could go 2 months without anything going on, and we'd still find a way to get through it and talk about it, I would say, yeah, I don't know, man. Good luck. We'll see. We just proved that baseball is not mandatory. We just proved it. We don't have to have it. There's the NFL draft. There's the NBA. And keep in mind, the NBA would still be going on right now under normal circumstances. That if this is the reason they decide to shut it down again, and look, since 1994, we haven't had any of this. There's been disagreements, and they're like all the things that you just laid out. There's been other problems, but at least putting a product out on the field since 1994, they haven't had trouble doing that. And now is the time that they're going to decide to dig in. And I'm not picking a side. I'm not saying the owners are lying. They have all this money and they won't give it up. I don't know, and I don't care. I'm not picking the player side, but I'm going to kill them by saying, you guys can't figure out a way to go back to work when you're making millions of dollars and other people are out of work and trying to find a way to pay their rent and put food on the table. I don't care who's right and who's wrong, LC. I don't care. Figure it out. Everyone else figured it out. There has to be a way for you guys to figure out how to play a 50-game season, an 80-game season. I don't care what it is. If you can't put a product on the field this summer, and put together some sort of season that makes some sort of sense for somebody, I've got no time for you anymore. I love watching Mike Trout play baseball. I love watching Cody Bellinger play baseball. I was desperate to see Mookie Betts in a Dodger uniform. If they don't play, whatever. Whatever. I got football. I got basketball. I got other things in my life that I can go watch. If you guys can't figure it out, you lost me.
I do care. I hear what you're saying. I hear what you're saying. But I do point fingers. I'm pointing fingers at Major League Baseball and the ownership group until they can at least justify the requests that they're making in terms of percentile and salary cuts. Like, you can't ask someone to give up the sort of numbers that they're talking about giving up and essentially just say, just trust me. Because I've given you all the reasons why in the world you shouldn't trust that ownership group. Again, if this was the NBA and this happened, I'd be like going, damn, that seems odd, because I thought the two parties trusted each other and realized they're in this together. But when it comes to baseball, no, never had that belief that the two parties were together. Never, 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 ever. I blame the ownership until they can prove quantifiably why they are asking for those specific level of pay cuts in order to get the games going, I'm going to sign with the players.
Yeah, that's fine. And good for you. I don't care. All I know is there's no baseball on my TV. They're both at fault, in my estimation. Find a way to split it. I hear the math that you're talking about makes sense to me, but, man, all I know is that everyone else is playing, and they're not. The Lakers are coming back on July 31st, trying to win that next championship. What about their most recent championship run? What was their most difficult opponent, according to them? That's next on The Morning Show on 710 ESPN. You know, LZ, I'm looking at the TV right now, and they're talking about student-athletes on campuses speaking out, using their voices. This combined with the name and likeness conversation that we've had and the momentum of the last couple of weeks. And again, I don't want to be a pessimist because I don't think I'm a naturally pessimistic guy, but I really hope that this time is different because we've seen little moments where we're like, oh, maybe this is when the players will realize they can affect some change. But this does feel different, doesn't it? That this is a topic and guys are saying, that guy's a problem over there, that guy's a problem over here. You guys are denying me my rights to make a buck. You guys are denying me my rights as a human being. I like it. I like that we're getting these conversations more and more and more, because the more often you have them, the more likely you are to get some change.
Well, and the other thing that's really good with it, and I agree 100% with you, Travis, aspect to this conversation is that the movement was ready. Mm-hmm. The movement was ready. There were already identifiable things that once the conversation goes, what's next? There were grassroots organizations and some politicians, local as well as federal, who were ready. They had a plan. All right, now that we got momentum, now you're asking, what can we do? These are the things that we can do. That is something that, you know, when we've had these conversations in the past, because of these tragedies, the movement wasn't ready. You know, Black Lives Matter wasn't established during Trayvon. It obviously wasn't there during Rodney King. But over the years, you know, there's been a coalition built of grassroots organizations so that when people come up and say, what can I do? There's an answer for it. And that was something that's different this go round. And then two, when it comes specifically to student athletes, again, and I don't want to dump on anyone, so I'm not going to mention any names. But we've had a generation of superstar athletes that weren't willing to wade into this space. And they set the tone for the next generation that was growing up. And they, too, were not willing to go into this space. But this new generation has grown up now with LeBron James, with Colin Kaepernick. This new generation has seen Dwayne Wade and Derrick Rose. Young women are seeing Me Too movement. In addition to the fact that you got someone like Amaya Moore, who was willing to put her WNBA career on hold so that she could fight for someone to get out of prison and address the criminal justice system. These are the people who are setting the tone, Serena Williams using her platform. And so now what we're seeing with this new generation, Travis, of student athletes, these athletes, and they have learned that this is what they need to do with the platform that they're given. And now that we have these protests going on, they're ready to mobilize and use it.
So Shaq was talking, LZ, about some of the toughest opponents that the Shaq and Kobe Laker combo had. Of course, they, you know, the three championship run, and it was one of the great Laker runs in the history of a team that's filled with great Laker runs. And he said, Shaq said, that the Portland Trailblazers were the toughest team that they ever faced. That, quote, they were the toughest team, and they were the only team that wasn't scared of us. It's the second part of that that I think is the kicker, because the other team through that run, the other team that at least I think of, is the Sacramento Kings. And the Sacramento Kings had some really good players and some really good teams. And as a Laker fan, it's a little difficult to admit this out loud, but had the officiating been a little different in one of those Sacramento series, who knows how that thing ended. But the fact of the matter is, Portland was not scared of the Lakers. And I don't know if we can say with a straight face that Chris Webber and Peja Stojakovic were not scared of the Lakers, because it sure looked like they were.
Man, listen. C. Webber's from the D. All right?
Right.
So this hurts my heart. He wasn't about that life, man. He was not about that life. And I'm just going, it hurts to say it. It really hurts to say it, because I, as I said, he's from the D. I love me some Chris Webber. When you rewatch that Game 7, man, And you know what I'm saying.
I know exactly what you're saying.
And when it started to squeeze, see, when people talk about who's not clutch and who's clutch, and you want to say LeBron James not clutch because he passes the ball. No, there's a different way to pass the ball, right? Jordan passed the ball in critical situations. Magic passes the ball in critical situations. LeBron is of that cut. In critical situations, if that's the best play, that's the best play. But you're making the best play. You're still deciding. Watching C-Webb during some of those critical moments in the series against the Lakers, he was passing the ball because he didn't want anything to do with what was happening. He was passing the ball because it's like going, however it goes down, don't blame me.
It was radioactive. I mean, it's like you said, that when the ball would go to Michael Jordan or to Magic Johnson or LeBron James or Larry Bird or whoever, they would catch the ball and they'd square up their guy and they'd look at the basket like, okay, what am I going to do? Am I going to shoot it? Am I going to drive it? Am I going to kick it? They were making a decision on how am I going to beat the guy in front of me. Chris Webber would get the ball and it's like, okay, just get it the hell out of my hands. I don't want it. Look, you take it. He didn't even look at the basket. It was just like a way station on its way to the next guy. And then you've got Peja Stojakovic, who for a long stretch of his career was one of the great shooters in NBA history, about as pure of a stroke as you're ever going to see. The guy was just, he's open, up, that's going down. Nothing can do that. And then you get into that situation against the Lakers in the Western Conference Finals, and he turns into Fernando Valenzuela. He's throwing screwballs off the side of the backboard. I mean, if that's not pressure, I don't know what it is. Missing happens, right? Yesterday on ESPN, they replayed that Lakers, the best of enemies, right? The Lakers-Celtic 80s rivalry back and forth. Larry Bird missed a couple of shots, but they rimmed out. They just didn't go down. They didn't hit the side of the backboard and were offline by 6 feet. That's what Stojakovic was doing. And you could say, it was a bad shot, but this was a common occurrence of, you know, for instance, Mike Bibby on those teams, Mike Bibby wasn't scared. Mike Bibby might have missed a couple of shots along the way, but Mike, you never got the sense that that the moment was a little big for Bibby. Stojakovic and Weber, it felt like it was cavernous for them.
Yeah. And it was so glaring when you watch these rebroadcasts, which the quarantine time has forced us to do on NBA TV, ESPN, and other outlets. We're watching these games over and over again, and you really get to say, oh, I didn't misremember. This is exactly what happened. He was scared out of his freaking mind. You mentioned Bibby. To me, like the real raw dog of that squad was Bobby Jackson. Remember Bobby Jackson?
Yeah, sure, from Minnesota.
Minnesota.
Bobby was like, I want to start. I want to be the star. I don't give a damn who's in front of me. Cole who? Cole B. Cole no. Like, he was going hard every single time. C-Webb and even Vlade had a little bit more, you know, oomph than C-Webb. You know, Vlade at least would catch it in the high post. Now, the offense that they had was designed for them to you know, play off all the motion that was happening from the high post or score if you need to. But at least Vlade would turn and square Shaq up and be a threat offensively. But to your point, C-Webb caught it in the high post during the critical moments.
Yep.
He didn't turn it along for ish. It was like Freddy Krueger was behind him. He turned around, he was going to be slashed.
All he was looking for was another dude in a purple jersey to throw the ball to. It's just anybody but me. You know what I mean? It's like anybody but me can take this shot or dribble the ball. And this goes all the way back to the time in Michigan with the timeout and everything and the travel that wasn't called. That when it got particularly tight, Chris Webber really, really struggled, not just in the NBA, but going back to that as well. And that's you can't unring that bell because, like you said, you go back and you look at it again. That does not look like the great players of the era. Reggie Miller missed some shots. He never didn't take it. He never didn't attack the basket or try to find one of his teammates. It wasn't just, get this thing out of my hands. I don't want to get anybody else but me. That's what you could almost feel the speed in his head watching it on TV.
Man. Yes. And it was shocking. It was so shocking.
Well,
no, dude, no.
At least Peja got a shot off. It was the worst looking shot I've ever seen in my life, but at least he squeezed the shot off along the way. All right, we're seeing more and more protests. We're seeing the energy carry through from what was a couple of weeks ago as strong as it is right now. What happens when the NFL kicks off? That's next on The Morning Show on 710 ESPN.